avoiding another tussle with whoever I'd peeved off, and eventually making my way to the police station. Grady had texted me after he left the night before to say I needed to file a formal report about the assault, and he offered to take me to see a doctor. The report would help him with his investigation, but the checkup would ease his mind. He'd suggested I spend the day in bed to try to clear my head, but the definition of clear seemed extremely subjective this week. I'd briefly considered closing the cafe for a few days while I recovered, and Grady, hopefully, found my attacker. But that seemed unwise after the wonderful turnout at my party. No need to risk giving folks the impression something was wrong after spending the whole week trying to prove everything was fine. Besides, perseverance was the key to success. Or at least that's what the poster hanging in my advisor's office said when I went to drop out of culinary school. I stepped back to admire my morning's work and adjusted the rolled paisley bandana I'd tied around my head, which struggled to wrangle my hair while hiding my goose egg. In 90 short minutes, the thrift store bicycle had gone from drab to fab, thanks to a little love and attention. I'd used the rest of my light blue spray paint to cover the frame, then stenciled my cafe logo along the center with some happy pink and yellow flowers where it had once said Schwinn. The braided vinyl basket had cleaned up nicely, and the ruined weave was easily righted. The small bin would have to be enough for now, but I had plans to get a larger metal-framed basket soon. I wove 2 dozen plastic flowers into the front as a finishing touch. I couldn't wait to ride it again. I patted the newly bleached bright white seat and smiled. "You look like my wagon's big sister." The revamped radio flyer stood at the Schwinn side. They were adorable together. A soft meow drew my attention to the open garage door. "Good morning, Maggie," I said. "Are you ready for your bath?" She arched her back. "I'm serious. I don't need you filling my house and cafe with sand fleas or anything else. You've got to get groomed, pretty lady. Also, thank you for sitting with me until I fell asleep last night. That was nice." She walked away. Story of my life. I left the bike to dry in the morning heat and followed the pretty cobblestone path from the carriage house to my home. There was plenty to accomplish before I needed to open the cafe in an hour. I unlocked the cafe's entrance door, taking my time at the window to enjoy the heavenly beach view. Families and couples were already out, kites in the air and blankets on the sand. Scents of last night's storm hung in the already humid air. I kicked sand off the boards, then went to set up for lunch. 3 cucumbers into a veggie chopping marathon. I remembered my lunch appointment with Sam Smart. My knife stilled in the air. I wanted to know what he knew about Mr. Metz, but I didn't want to be alone with someone who may or may not have recently brained me. Also, I'd promised Grady to let my independent investigation go, and I didn't break promises. I dried my hands on a kitchen towel and dialed Sam's office. Voicemail picked up after the 4th ring. "Hi, Sam," I began in my cheeriest voice. "It's Everly Swan. I was just calling to confirm our lunch plans today. Here's the thing. I own a cafe, so I'm not sure why I thought I could get away at lunchtime." I gave a little laugh. "However, I feel terrible breaking plans last minute, so why don't you stop in here for lunch again? I'll fix you whatever you'd like. No charge. Sound good?" There would be witnesses here in case Sam was a murderer. If he wasn't a killer, then the offer to feed him for free would make up for my changing the plans last minute. "If I don't hear back from you," I told his machine, "I'll assume you accept the invitation. No need to call if you're coming. See you soon. Have a great day." I hung up, praising the sun, moon, and stars for voicemail. That would have been a horrendous conversation to have with a human. What could I have said if he'd insisted on eating at his place or rescheduling for after hours? "No thanks. I know you're a criminal and fear you're a murderer. Let's only get together in public places from now on." Hopefully, the quiver in my voice wasn't as perceptible over the phone as it was in my head, because the entire time I was keeping my voice perky, my brain was imagining Sam on the other side of that dropping curtain at Lucinda's house, or standing in the shadows of my porch, a blunt object poised to swing at my head. shivering from my shoulders to my flip-flops. I texted Aunt Clara. She promised to come right over and stay as long as I needed. Aunt Fran would cover Blessed Bee for the day. After I washed my hands, I got back to menu prep. Hannah had brought enough produce to the party to keep me cooking for a week, and I needed to turn some of her greens into meals before they weren't so green anymore. I rolled a pair of lettuce heads on the counter and whacked them through with a cleaver. In my inventory of leftovers and unused ingredients, I found enough quinoa to bury myself alive. Salads it is! Summer soups and salads were personal favorites of mine anyway, so I counted the insane amount of quinoa as a blessing. I smiled as I wrote the salad and soup names on my new menu board. Berry, arugula, and quinoa salad with lemon chia seed dressing. Apple and arugula salad with maple tahini dressing. Chilled asparagus soup. Chilled strawberry soup. And for the guests who somehow managed to not like cold soups and salad, I added two of my almost always available cafe staples. Crisp cucumber sandwiches. Salmon cucumber boats. I cleared some space beside the food list and added some big bubble letters with today's specialty tea flavors, starting with my personal favorite. Iced Carolina chai, blueberry watermelon, peach basil, sparkling mint lime. Perfect. I sliced, diced, and pureed until Aunt Clara appeared at the door half an hour later. Come in! I rushed over the wide, whitewashed floorboards to hug her, wincing as her arms wrapped around me. What's wrong? I considered lying, but that was a waste of time. Someone attacked me last night. I'm fine, but I'm officially ducking out of the private eye business. Would you like some strawberry soup? She flung her arms up, hands flailing overhead. You were attacked, she wailed. You should have called me. Have you seen a doctor? Let me take you now, or make you a poultice. Oh, my stars. I waved her off. I'm fine. I don't need a doctor or a poultice. I'm just a little sore. What's important is that I'm going to keep my curious nose right here. I poked my nose with one finger, where it belongs, and focus on making this iced tea shop a huge success. She fanned her face and went to pour a glass of ice water. Glory! Promise. I made a show of stirring my bright pink soup. This business is my new distraction from Mr. Payne's murder. My attacks, the break-ins, and every other scary thing I'm done worrying about. In fact, I'm thinking of buying a mini chalkboard for outside the door and more deck furniture. With pillows. Aunt Clara liberated an apron from the metal hook on my pantry door and strapped it around her tiny middle. This is awful. She shook her head and took long, exaggerated breaths. You were always interested in facts. From the youngest of ages, you wanted to know why, when, and how about everything. I could hardly tell a story without interruption. For a while, I thought you'd become a neurosurgeon or a rocket scientist, something that took a decade of schooling just so you could stuff as many facts into your head as possible. I rolled my eyes. Rocket scientists don't really live up to the hype, you know. It's just an engineering degree. See? She raised her eyebrows. Who else would know that? Everyone knows that. I didn't. She hip-checked me out of the way, then took over stirring my pureed soup. Sit down and relax. I'll do this. I moved on to tossing salad ingredients into an extra-large serving bowl. I appreciate you coming, but I really am fine. I'd do anything for you, she said. I love you very much. You know that, right? Of course I do. I love you too. She returned her attention to the soup. I wondered a little, since you were nearly killed last night and didn't call me. It leaves room for doubt, and I think maybe my efforts as an aunt are failing. I shut my eyes so they wouldn't roll. Clara was a truly gentle soul. But the downside with that was that her feelings were perpetually being hurt by someone. Far too often, me. I didn't not call. It just never crossed my mind. She made a gasping sound, then touched the pad of one thumb to the corner of her eye. Don't cry, I pleaded. I was confused afterward, but Grady checked me out and put me to bed. He wouldn't have left if I needed more help. He secured the house, and I fell asleep. I honestly didn't have another clear thought until this morning. If she counted 4:15 as morning, when I woke up with all sorts of crystal clear thoughts, mostly designed to scare me to death. I just wish you'd called me or Fran to take care of you, that's all. When you push us away, it makes me think you don't trust us to help you, and then I worry I've done something to cause a rift. I abandoned my salad prep to wrap her in my arms. I trust you both implicitly. If Grady hadn't shown up, I might have called you. I can't honestly say, but if I didn't, it wouldn't have been meant as a slight. I didn't know what would have happened if I'd woken up on the floor by myself. I hadn't even realized I was attacked until Grady told me. I rested my head on her shoulder. I've made a mess of my return to charm. You haven't. I have. First, I hid away from everyone because I had so much guilt for leaving and shame for the epic way I tanked that adventure. Then all of this happened. It's no wonder people felt iffy about me. She patted my puffy hair. I promised Hazel I'd take care of you. I just want to make sure I'm living up to that. My eyes stung at the sound of Grandma's name. I should have been here when she died. I never got to say goodbye. Aunt Clara kissed my head. You said goodbye when you left, darling. No one could have known she wouldn't be here when you came home. I should have visited more often. She understood. More than any of us, really. After all, she left Charm once, too. I snapped upright, peeling myself away from Aunt Clara's embrace. What? Her and your mother both. Your particular line of swan women is filled with rebels. Even my mother was a bit of a tart. She didn't leave Charm, but I hear some of the women around here wished she would have. Clara nodded, a slow smile creeping over her face. Fran and I always admired our sister for being brave enough to go. I took a few steps back to process. My mind raced with questions. Why had no one ever told me this? Why hadn't Grandma? Where did she go? Grandma, I mean. Hollywood. Hollywood! Good grief! A gigantic smile stretched my lips. She always had a flair for the dramatic and a desperate love of cowboys. Back then, Western television shows were all the rage. The Cisco Kid, Maverick, Gunsmoke. She said she wanted to be an actress, or at least get a job on one of those shows. She told our mom that being a part of something that grand was a life experience worth having, even if it meant upsetting her for a while. Hazel was gone more than a year before she came back, and she was awful at keeping in touch while she was away. Who knows what she was up to all the way across the country? Well, she paused. We know a little about what she was up to. She got to be an audience member on the $64,000 question, and she came home pregnant with your mother. So? Aunt Clara tipped her head left and right, a small prideful smile on her lips. Her adventure wasn't a total bust. Without that side trip down life's path, we would never have had your mother or you. She crept forward to set her soft palm against my cheek, then hooked some flyaway hair behind my ear. The concept rocked my already shaky idea of who I was. Every story I'd heard of swan women before that moment was to say they towed the line, played according to the rules of silly legends, and accepted their confined fates. I was more like my grandma than I'd ever realized. The warmth of pride filled my chest. For Grandma's decision to challenge what she was told, and for my mom's and mine as well. I imagined it was infinitely harder to leave when they had. Times were tougher then. Money tighter, transportation options fewer. Today, I could be in L.A. before dark. I couldn't begin to imagine how Grandma had gotten there, or how long it had taken her to save the money to go. Clara unloaded the dishwasher. Fran and I think your grandfather was an actor named Jack Randall. but your grandma would never say. He went by Alan Byron for a while, too. Very popular cowboy. She had a thing for chaps and spurs, I guess. Anyway, after all those years of being a Hollywood cowboy, he just falls right off his horse one day during a shoot. Dead. She snapped her fingers for effect. Hazel wore black for a month. She claimed they were only friends, that he was the nicest actor in Hollywood. But he died suddenly at 39, and she was torn up over it. I don't think that's a coincidence. I stored that information in the back of my reeling mind. Aunt Clara's stories always had a way of messing with my mind. She gave the perfect blend of provable fact and questionable theory. The wind chimes jingled over my door with the arrival of my first customers. I'd have to think more about my possible television cowboy grandpa later. "Welcome to Sun, Sand, and Tea," I said, rounding the counter to greet my guests. "I'm so glad you're here." Business was steady from 11 until 1. Everyone seemed satisfied with the menu options, and a few out-of-towners thought it was magnificent that I changed the menu from day to day, and totally at will. I served while Aunt Clara cleaned. The process was a gloriously simple dance. Summer soups and salads climbed higher on my favorites list as I filled orders in seconds. The no-prep, no-wait scenario was something my guests seemed to like, too. By 1:15, I was coming off the high of victory and feeling a little miffed. Yes, I'd had a successful day, proving the well-attended grand opening hadn't been a fluke. But Grady still hadn't shown up with my key, and Sam had stood me up. I tapped my fingers on the counter beside Aunt Clara. I specifically asked Sam to call if he couldn't make it. He didn't call, and he hasn't made it. It's almost 1:30. What if he didn't get my message? What if he thinks I stood him up? Or, she said, interrupting my spiral, maybe Sam got tied up with a client. This is the time of year people start drifting over the bridge and thinking they should relocate to Charm permanently. I've known him to show a tourist the same house every day for a week without making a sale. The visitor goes home happy anyway, telling big stories to their mainland friends about the time they almost bought a house on an island. She was right. That did happen. I'm going to call him. I turned my phone over and dialed. My jaw clenched in irritation. Voicemail. I disconnected. Do you think he's intentionally ignoring my calls? Why would he do that? Aunt Clara flicked a polite look in my direction. She'd already told me what she thought. I really don't know, dear. I dialed Molly's Market. I had other ways to do things. Hi, Mr. Waters. It's Everly Swan. I was just wondering if you've seen Sam Smart this morning. Sam's realty office was right next door to Molly's on Vine Street, and Mr. Waters took enough cigar breaks on the bench outside the market to know if Sam was in and how long he'd been there. I hung up, feeling provoked. He says the realty office hasn't opened today. Aunt Clara stilled, apparently mulling that over. Maybe he's out showing homes. My torturous mind had already worked up a dozen more sinister reasons. He attacked me last night was at the top of my list. What if it was Sam who hurt me and stole those maps and blueprints? They had his company stamp on them. I don't really think Sam is a violent fellow, Clara said, looking terribly distraught at the idea. I'm calling Grady. I walked toward the rear deck for some privacy. Aunt Clara thought I was losing it. I could see it in her eyes.
Hayes,
Grady answered on the first ring. It's Everly, I said. Swan, I added, as if anyone had ever known another Everly.
This isn't a good time,
Grady said.
Let me call you back.
No, wait. Now that I had him on the phone, I wasn't sure how to broach the subject without making it seem as if I'd continued poking into his investigation, when I hadn't done anything at all. I was supposed to have lunch with Sam Smart, but he never showed, and Mr. Waters says he didn't open the office today, so I'm a little worried.
You're worried about Sam Smart?
I'm worried he might have been the one who attacked me, and now he's fled town to escape Mr. Payne's murder charge because I had all those blueprints and he knows I was on to him. Grady groaned.
We talked about this already.
I'm not getting involved. I'm only speculating based on previously gathered information.
Where are you?
He asked. Sun, sand, and tea. It's been a busy morning.
Stay there. I'll be over later.
Wait, I said again. Don't hang up on me. Aren't you going to at least say something about what I just told you? Did you know Sam has a slew of fraud and embezzlement charges? I looked him up online last night.
Yes,
Grady snapped.
And I know, not because you told me, but because I'm the detective. And no, I'm not addressing your wild theories because I've got bigger problems right now. I told you this isn't a good time.
I bristled at his awful manners. What happened to the gallant savior I'd had last night?
Men.
I threw my head back and straightened my spine. Well, I hope you'll at least look for Sam when you finish doing whatever it is that's so important right now. Grady's breath puffed through the line in long, measured bursts. I imagined him silently counting to 10.
I don't need to look for Sam Smart because I know where he is. I'm standing 20 feet from him, trying to get off the phone with you.
Well, if you're not arresting Sam for murder or for assaulting me, can you please tell him I'll be at the cafe all day if he wants to come by? Grady chuckled darkly, his patience clearly at its end.
I would, but he's floating in his pool, face down, right where the gardeners found him before they called me.
Chapter 19. Lou stared at me through the glass door I couldn't tear myself away from, cell phone still clutched in my hand. He fixed one coal black eye on my panicked face, seeming to understand. Sam Smart was dead. I'd spoken to him last night. He'd sat in my iced tea shop handing out business cards and watching the time. So what had happened to him after he'd rushed off to his prior engagement that ended with him face down in his pool? Where had he gone? Had he made it there? Who would have killed him? Was it the person he was in such a hurry to see, or someone else? I strained my brain, trying to recall Sam's face at Lucinda's party. But the night was a little fuzzy due to the nearly incapacitating fear still clinging to my skin. An unsettling chill climbed the back of my neck whenever I gave last night any serious thought. It was a psychological defense mechanism, no doubt, my mind's desperate attempt to keep me out of the loony bin. I took slow, measured breaths and refocused on the cafe behind me. The sound of gently sloshing tea over ice, the beloved sighs of satisfied customers, and the clink-clink of forks and spoons on salad plates and soup bowls. Sun, sand, and tea wasn't busy, but it wasn't empty either, and I still didn't know who the town gossip blogger was, so I couldn't afford a breakdown. I definitely didn't want to give any ammunition that could be used to try to sink my ship again. Clara met me halfway to the counter, near an empty set of tables. Her worried expression crumbled into despair as I relayed the heartbreaking news.
Oh my,
she whispered, rubbing my back as we made our way to the prep area.
Oh, this is awful. 2 murders in a week. It's unheard of.
Time crawled by until the wind chimes jingled over the front door again, and my heart danced with hope that Grady had gotten away long enough to fill me in on the details of Sam's death. Plus, I needed my key back. With a lunatic trying to silence me at every turn, I preferred to know where all the keys to my house were. Mr. Metz thundered inside, growling into a tiny cell phone pressed to one big ear. Clara's eyes widened. I hustled over to meet him.
Today,
he barked, stopping me in my tracks, his voice nearly rattling the windows.
I don't care how you do it, just make it happen.
His striped dress shirt was open at the collar, as if his thick neck had popped a button. I tried not to stare at the blue vein pulsating at the side of his throat. The other customers gawked openly. I gave them my least terrified smile. Mr. Metz dropped his cell phone on the counter with a clatter. Dark stubble covered his ruddy cheeks, and curly black hair peeked through his open collar.
You,
he snapped, finally making eye contact with me.
Me?
I did a little wave, hoping he'd heard all good things and knowing he hadn't.
What can I get you?
I pointed to the menu board. Today's selections are up there, and we have a number of iced teas on tap. You're welcome to sample before you choose. He scowled. My gaze dropped to a bandaged hand at his side. White gauze wrapped the palm and knuckles, dark spots seeping from beneath. Clara sneaked out from behind me and went to stand at my side.
The old-fashioned sun tea is always a good choice.
Fine, he growled. Give me that.
Metz lowered himself onto a stool at the counter and rested his injured hand on the marble. I placed a napkin and straw beside the massive white bandage while Clara poured the tea.
What happened to your hand?
I asked. It hadn't been injured 2 days ago when we'd first met. I couldn't help wondering if Sam Smart had any defense wounds when Grady found him. Metz's cheek lifted with a smile that looked more like a sneer. He raised the bandaged hand and made a show of bending and stretching the scraped-up fingers.
I did this, busting heads at the job site. Gotta keep them in line or they run all over you.
The heads?
I asked. Clara nudged me away and pushed the tea toward him on the napkin.
There you are. Enjoy.
I shifted nervously.
Can I get you something to eat? Salad? Sandwich? Maybe a light dessert?
He looked over his shoulder at the door.
Maybe. I'm supposed to meet someone here.
Who?
The word was out before I realized it might be rude to ask.
I can help you keep watch,
I suggested, hoping to seem less nosy. He glowered.
You're from here, right?
Yes,
I looked to Aunt Clara. If I couldn't answer his question, she surely could.
Why?
What's your mayor's problem?
Mayor Dummy?
Clara asked, hurrying into the conversation.
Mayor Dunfree,
I corrected, breaking the name into syllables.
I don't know him very well,
I admitted. But then something occurred to me. Is he giving you a hard time about the B&Bs? Mayor Dunfree had been Mr. Payne's biggest advocate when it came to petitioning the rest of the town council to keep me from opening Sun Sand and Tea. Maybe he had taken up Mr. Payne's torch for stopping Metz's renovations on Bayview.
Yeah,
Metz groused, bending and stretching his bandaged fingers.
I thought I'd finally gotten rid of all my problems.
I stifled a shiver, hoping Mr. Payne and Sam Smart hadn't been two of Metz's problems. 20 minutes later, Metz had yelled at two more people via cell phone and taken his tea to go, having apparently been stood up. After that, I counted the minutes until closing time. I needed to talk to Grady, and I'd promised to file an official report about last night at the station. The way I saw it, he couldn't accuse me of interfering with his case when I showed up. I was only going because he asked me to make the report. And if the topic of my workday happened to come up, I might be inclined to mention the angry injured man who scared the tea out of me every time I saw him. I called it quits at 7, satisfied that everyone planning to stop in for a glass of tea or a bite to eat had already done so. From here on out, the big winners in town sold ice cream or alcohol. I sold neither, but I could use a little of both. Aunt Clara had left a few minutes before 6 for dinner plans with Aunt Fran, so I was on my own to lock up, change clothes, and head to the police station. I didn't want to be caught walking alone after dark again, so I swapped my sundress for my most comfortable jeans and a flowy maroon tank top, then saddled up on my newly painted bike. Each time I tried to think about what I would put in my official statement, my brain went blank and refused to bring anything relevant to mind. Instead, I found myself focusing on why Grady had told me to stay put because he'd be over when he finished at Sam's place, but he never showed up. That just made me mad. I decided to think about tea instead. Tea made me happy. Once I got home from the station, I would spend my night prepping a few new tea jugs that could steep in the sun tomorrow. My old-fashioned sweet tea was a favorite, and it made a nice base for several other flavors folks loved, like my strawberry basil. If I wasn't careful to keep plenty in stock, I'd run out. I'd also need a few gallons of black tea for my raspberry mint blend, and maybe just one green tea. I hadn't decided what to do with that yet. I imagined each finished drink in the perfect jar, stuffed with fruit, herbs, and ice. Oh, and I wanted to make an Earl Grey cocktail, which was basically Earl Grey with a dash of lavender, honey, and fresh squeezed lemon. I'd stick a sprig of lavender in for aesthetics and pizzazz. I fell into an easy rhythm as I pedaled and dreamed of customers' awed faces when they experienced the beauty and simplicity of a perfect iced tea escape. Tomorrow, I'd add some sweets to the menu. Police station first, then tea making. But before I could do any of that, I had two stops to make on my promised patrol of Amelia's little libraries. I pedaled toward my first stop, soaking up the gentle warmth of a late spring evening. Laughter floated on the breeze as a couple stepped and sank repeatedly through the thick, dry sand near public parking. They leaned against one another's tanned frames to stay upright in their current state of bliss. Beyond them, a line of gray-haired men spilled from old pickup trucks parked along the road. Aluminum-framed chairs hung over their shoulders like weird rectangular purses, and tackle boxes, coolers, and fishing poles were clasped in one hand, the rusty handles of little beach wagons pulled along by the other. Their hats were heavily laden with whirligigs and doodads as they made their way to the water's edge, buzzing with anticipation of the night's big catch. I slowed my pace to a crawl, letting the beautiful twilight view settle in. Before I'd left town, I'd thought of Charm only as a daytime playground. But since returning home, the island had looked different to me in many ways. For one thing, I'd become highly aware of how much folks enjoyed the nights here. At least once a week, there was a bonfire on the beach after dark. Sometimes I could see the flames and hear music from my deck. And I knew from personal experience that the ice cream shop stayed busy until well after 10, as did many restaurants and cafes. People had house parties or cruised the main strip along the bay, going nowhere and in no hurry. I'd done many of those things myself, but I'd only thought of them abstractly. Nothing about the island had seemed quite as lovely or extraordinary to me then, the way it did now. I supposed time and life experience had made the difference, peeled away the youthful blinders and revealed a much deeper and more fascinating world that I'd not been able to see before. I slid off my seat and walked my bike up to the first little library. Everything looked perfect. I opened the door and moved a few books around. Ah, no sand. A lovely literary selection. My work there was done. I snapped a picture on my phone and sent it to Amelia so she'd know I'd kept my promise and wouldn't have to make a trip to the boardwalk tonight. Climbing back on my new ride with a satisfied smile, I picked up a little speed as I headed for Little Library Number 2, and I soaked in the warm, salty wind and steady thunk-a-thunk of my tires as they moved over the historic boardwalk. I tried in vain to imagine my mother or grandmother riding her bike in my place decades back. Were they happy then? What would they have thought of me today? Would they be proud? Maybe I hadn't accomplished much yet, but I had hoped that I could make them proud in time. A pair of boys stood in front of the next library, laughing and looking around suspiciously. Suddenly, I remembered that I hadn't chased away the vandal last night, only frightened a guy who didn't understand sunscreen or how to care for a burn. "Hey!" I hollered, pedaling faster. The boys caught sight of me and started. "Hold up!" I called, determined to look semi-normal in case they weren't up to no good. The duo turned and fled, banging into one another and toppling two big red buckets of sand onto the boardwalk. It was them! "Stop!" I screamed, leaning forward over my handlebars and standing up to pedal. They only laughed louder and changed direction, diverting from the clean, even boardwalk to a rugged dirt path behind the public changing rooms. I gave chase like a small-town superhero until my front tire hit a loose rock and I went careening toward the public restrooms. I dropped my bike and floundered, trying to get a footing on solid ground. "Come back here!" The boys doubled over in laughter, having stopped precariously in front of a small trench masked by seagrass. They watched while I untangled my feet to regain pursuit. Neither kid was more than 14 years old, and both were rail thin with miles of freckles and mounds of wavy sun-bleached hair. I slowed down and limped, feigning an injury and waiting for them to turn away. A moment later, they toppled into the hidden trench with dual yelps. I took my time closing the distance between us. That ought to teach them to laugh at a lady who'd lived here twice as long as they'd been alive. I braced my hands on my hips and tried not to look as out of breath as I felt. You guys have filled your last little library with sand. Now give me your names so I can tell your mother, the police, and the owner of those libraries. What you've been up to is absolutely rotten.
Yeah, right,
the taller kid said, pulling to his feet.
Give you our names so you can turn us in? What do we look like to you, morons?
I held my tongue.
Oh, snap!
The shorter hooligan popped up beside him. He covered his mouth and raised one knee in a dramatic bout of laughter.
No way!
What? I asked. The boy pointed an obnoxious finger at me.
It's her, man. She's the one.
He mimed falling on the ground, laughing hysterically. I got the feeling these two weren't taking my authority very seriously.
No.
His friend dragged the word out for 5 long seconds before offering his friend a hand up.
Shut up. For real?
What? I repeated, more aggressively this time, internally fuming that I'd lost the upper hand. They straightened and put on a matching pair of cocky faces.
We saw you get pushed into the marsh,
the first one said.
Yeah, like a fool,
the other added. My hands slid off my hips to hang loosely at my sides. You did?
Yeah, dude. We remember because we were digging your hair, you know? We were on the beach getting sand.
You were? I touched one hand to my silky headband. I remember seeing 2 boys on the beach that night.
Us,
they said in unison, patting their narrow chests. I turned my face toward the surf, bringing the memory of their silhouettes to the forefront of my mind. I'd hoped then that they wouldn't have seen what had happened, much less recognize me. But now I wanted to hug them. They must have seen my attacker. And if they recognized me from that distance, maybe they recognized the other party too. I was ready to make a trade. Their anonymity in exchange for my assailant's name and a good faith promise never to mess with Amelia's libraries again. I spun back to them. Can you describe the person who pushed me? Their footfalls beat a rhythm in the distance, already several yards away. Hey! I took off after them. Stop! Don't run! I sprinted for at least 10 seconds, then jog-walked until spots danced in my peripheral vision and one calf cramped up. Jeez! I panted, bending forward to brace sweaty hands on shaky knees. I gulped air through a tight, painful windpipe, bending my knees and lowering myself to the ground, trying to convince myself not to roll onto my back and die. I am in terrible shape, I thought. No wonder my get fit was usually so disappointed in me. I shifted to one hip and worked my phone free from my pocket, dialing Amelia. In between raspy pants, I provided her with a description of her vandals and regaled her with the story of my grand heroic attempt to capture them. We laughed until I was in tears, and she agreed to pick me up because there was no way I could walk or bike home. Plus, she said she'd join me at the police station. Thanks to my partial success tonight, she now had a report of her own to file. Chapter 20. I met Amelia on Ocean Drive, across the marsh from the boardwalk. I'd collected my abandoned bike and walked it to the road. She stuck the Schwinn in the back seat of her convertible and headed for the police station. Thanks, I told her, checking my face in the visor mirror. I'd laughed my mascara down to my teeth, and my lipstick was smudged all over my hands from trying to shut myself up as I'd snorted in hysterics. Amelia turned onto Sand Street at the light. She slid a mischievous gaze in my direction while I wiped the lipstick onto a tissue from her glove box.
You really asked for their names so you could turn them in?
Yes, I started laughing again.
I don't know what comes over me sometimes. I don't think, I just act, and it gets me into so much trouble. You'd think I'd learn.
I don't know, she said.
I like that you can just do things.
She sounded as if she thought impulsivity was a goal and not a curse.
I get all paralyzed with fear and anxiety until I can't decide what to do, so I usually just go read a book.
Reading is good,
I guess. What do you do when you get upset?
Probably charge into battle.
Ha!
I cook. Then I eat. I gave her a sad smile. We all have our things. We passed Charming Reads and Amelia slowed.
The light's still on at my shop. Do you care if we stop? Sometimes Dad falls asleep and people just keep coming in.
Not at all. A familiar SUV was parked at the curb outside Blessed Bee. My aunts closed up at 5 most days, so the curbside parking was mostly for Sandy Seaside Sweet Shack at this hour. Grady was getting ice cream. He'd stood me up at Sun Sand and Tea and hadn't returned my key, and now that I was on my way to find him, he was out having fun. When Amelia climbed out of the car, I joined her.
Hey, I said, I'll be right back.
She shrugged.
Meet you back here in 10?
Perfect. I marched along the sidewalk, propelled by purpose and partially carried on the scent of fresh-baked waffle cones and homemade hot fudge. I stood at the patio's edge, scanning faces and preparing what I wanted to say. A thin hand popped into the air and waved. I followed the arm down to a pretty young blonde I recognized as Denise, the au pair.
Everly, she waved. Come, sit.
I suddenly understood what Amelia had been talking about when she said she got too nervous to speak. Grady wasn't there, and I had no idea what to say to Denise. I peeked behind me, hoping Amelia was done already and waiting at the car, giving me an excuse to turn around and leave. No such luck.
Everly!
Denise called again. This time she stood, in case someone on the block hadn't noticed her. Soft blonde hair tumbled over her shoulders and covered the top portion of her flimsy tank top. It was cornflower blue, an exact match to the color of her perfect eyes. Her white skirt was pleated, and her long tan legs led the way down to little designer tennis shoes. I felt 400 years old. Forcing a big smile, I pretended to finally see her. She sighed in relief, then pushed the empty seat beside her away from the table so I could sit. As I crossed the crowded patio, I spotted Denver sitting beside Denise, his big gray eyes fixed on a pile of sprinkles sliding down a strawberry river. Vanilla ice cream puddled in the bowl around his melting sundae. I couldn't bring myself to sit.
How's that ice cream? I asked Denver.
I would have asked Denise, but all she had was a bottle of water.
Good.
He positioned his face over the cup and lapped at it like a dog.
Oh, Denise leaned over the table. Careful now. It's good to eat, but you probably don't want to wear it.
Denver froze, his expression full of wonder.
You can wear ice cream?
No,
Denise laughed. She crumpled a napkin and tossed it at his sticky face.
Silly.
The love she had for him was written in her gentle smile.
You're really good with him, I said. It's nice.
She beamed.
Well, Denny and I've been pretty tight since he started preschool. We go way back.
Denver threw the napkin back at her, a little more chocolatey than it had arrived.
Don't call me that. I hate Denny.
He made a face.
It's a restaurant. I'm a man.
Denise leaned away and crossed her arms.
Well, that's true, but I wish we could find you a nickname. Every sweet, adorable boy needs a cool nickname.
How about Bruce?
I laughed and squatted beside him, immediately drawn in.
I like it.
Just like Bruce Banner. His mouth fell open.
Yeah,
he said.
No one knows Hulk's real name.
I didn't argue because I liked the awestruck look on his face too much. I know a lot of his secrets. Denver quirked a sun-lightened eyebrow.
You're Daddy's friend.
I glanced at Denise. I think so. Though Grady could have at least called me today, knowing it was after 8 and I still hadn't given my statement at the station. What if something else had happened to me? I mean, wasn't he just going on about how keeping me safe was a huge distraction?
I'm Everly. I remember, he said. Where'd you get a name like that?
It's a family name, I said.
Where'd you get a name like Denver? It's my grandma's name, and she's a giant big deal.
Your grandma's name is Denver? That seemed unusual, but kind of quirky and interesting. Denise sat forward, wiping his face with sudden gusto.
Look at this. You've got a little something.
He spat at the napkin roving around his mouth.
Stop!
He wiggled and fussed until she relented.
Yuck!
Denise gave him a pointed look, then turned a smile on me.
Are you going to get something? You're welcome to sit with us if you are. We could talk about horses, she suggested.
Denver loves horses.
Me too,
I said. I really can't stay. I'm headed to the police station with a friend, and I'm supposed to meet her in a minute. I checked the street again in case Amelia was already waiting. Mr. Metz came into view, strolling casually along the sidewalk with a rolled blueprint in his hand, waving it at a man I knew from his construction crew at the Colonial on Bayview. Thankfully, he wasn't yelling as loudly as he had been earlier. And again, the white noise of 50 sugar-buzzed people helped cover most sounds. He turned and looked in my direction, so I dropped into the previously rejected seat.
Maybe I could sit for a minute, I said, smiling brightly at Denise. Great.
Her brows tensed as she scanned the area to see what had changed my mind.
Grady's supposed to meet us here soon.
What? I asked. When? I couldn't be caught having ice cream with Denise and Denver. It'd look like I was stalking Grady, or prodding them for information. Grady was sure to have an opinion about me running into them, and his opinion was guaranteed to be negative. I stood up again. Denver stopped his spoon halfway to his mouth.
Where are you going now?
I glanced in Metz's direction. I still hadn't had a chance to tell Grady about the injury Metz had from all that head-busting. Metz was gone, but Grady was making his way through the crowd on the patio.
I'd better get back to my friend.
Hunching down, I hoped Grady wouldn't see me and squeezed past a table of teenagers.
Talk to you soon, I called.
I fled the crowded patio by way of an access gate, landing gracelessly in the alley the shop shared with Blessed Bee. I watched as Grady greeted Denise with a smile and Denver with a giant hug. The boy stood on his chair and leapt into Grady's arms. My heart did a nonsensical flip. A moment later, Grady looked in my direction, and so did Denver and Denise. Someone had tattled. I ducked and crouch-jogged back to the road where I'd left Amelia and her car and rounded the corner to safety, only to come face-to-face with Mr. Metz climbing into his car. His thick brows bunched together. I waved.
Hello again.
What were you doing in that alley?
He asked. I forced myself to look natural.
Nothing.
I moved past him, turning my back to Blessed Bee in an attempt to put a few more inches between the irritable giant and myself.
Were you eavesdropping?
His voice was low and thick, an unspoken threat slicing through the words. He slammed his door shut, then took a step away from the car.
Are you following me?
I was just getting ice cream, I told him over one shoulder as I picked up my pace.
I'm meeting a friend. I have to go.
I turned and ran for Amelia's car at the end of the block. Thankfully, she was already behind the wheel.
Go!
I yelled, jumping into the car and yanking the door shut behind me. She looked up from the book she was reading.
Why are you all sweaty again?
Fear, I swallowed hard. I saw Mr. Metz yelling at some of his men and waving a blueprint. Then he saw me sneaking out of an alley, and now he thinks I'm stalking him. What if he's the killer and I just made him really mad? Amelia dropped her book on the console, jamming her car into drive. She headed back down Main Street to Middletown, breaking the posted speed limit all the way to the police station. The officer behind the desk put us in separate rooms to complete our reports. I asked for more paper twice and stuffed the sheets I'd scribbled on into my purse, thankful they couldn't see every version I'd written. I'd had no idea how hard it was to state only the facts, especially when I didn't have any. Mostly, I wrote 3 pages of personal observations, things like what I'd taken from the curb outside Lucinda's house and how it felt like someone followed me home. But I couldn't substantiate that. I admitted the feeling might have been because I'd seen someone in the upstairs window when I left the party, but I couldn't say who they were or if they could identify me from that distance. Mine was a useless report, more or less. I got home, got a text from Grady, thought he was at the door, but instead I blacked out. Maybe Grady could at least use the time frame I gave. It was the only thing I was certain of. Once he had a suspect, the information might at least help pin them with my assault. Amelia was in the waiting room with a book when I got there.
"Finished already?" she asked.
"I've been more than an hour." She looked at the clock on the wall in confusion, then back to her book.
"Wow, okay, let's go."
She tucked a slip of paper between the pages and hopped to her feet.
"I am really loving this book."
I felt lighter when I climbed into her convertible. We'd made our reports. The police would do the rest, and soon our troubles would be solved. Amelia reversed out of the lot, humming along to a country song playing softly on the radio. I watched her cheerful expression. She made life look easy.
"I know it's shameless," she said, "but I love this car so much."
I laughed. "Who wouldn't? It's adorable, and it fits you perfectly. Every beach babe needs an open-air ride." Amelia's eyes went wide, and her smile became jubilant.
"When you get your golf cart, we should paint it to match your wagon and bike."
"I love this woman."
"That sounds perfect."
I was thinking of making delivery an option so folks who can't get away from their desks could still have something good for lunch.
"Better get 2 carts then,"
she added matter-of-factly.
"You'll need one for emergencies and another for your driver."
Right. I'd have to hire a driver. I didn't have the money for 1 golf cart yet, let alone a 2nd and an employee. "I'll have to put a pin in this until business picks up."
"It's fine," she said, motoring carefully through town. "Business goals are supposed to challenge you. They seem like impossibilities until suddenly they aren't. It's then that you'll realize how awesome you really are by seeing how far you've come. Trust me, I've been there a couple of times."
She turned onto Middletown Street, and my attention drifted out the passenger window. Lucinda's home, the one I'd fled from less than 24 hours ago, was silent and dark now. No evidence the big shindig had ever happened.
"Were you at Lucinda's last night?"
I hadn't seen her, but it had been crowded.
"No, I wanted to finish my book."
"No luck?" I asked. The book writing between us was only about 3/4 of the way read. She gave me a puzzled look.
"No, I finished."
I lifted the book up. "Are you rereading the end?" She laughed.
"Yeah, right. I started this book at breakfast."
"No way." I dropped it back on the console. "I'm only on chapter 7 of the book I borrowed from one of your libraries 2 days ago.
"Well, reading is practically my job, and you've been busy. Speaking of that, where are you on the investigation? I meant to ask earlier when you jumped into the car, but I thought we were being chased to the police station."
I heaved a sigh. "I'm nowhere, and I promised Grady I'd leave it alone." I filled her in on every theory I had before we made it to my place. We rocked to a stop in the grassy area beside my house.
"Geez, Louise," she gasped. "You could write a novel with all this crazy. You can't make this kind of stuff up. You've been home 3 months, and this town has seen more action than it has in a decade."
She unlatched her seatbelt and swiveled to face me. I frowned. "I just hope no one thinks any of the recent chaos has anything to do with me."
It would be interesting to look up local articles from the months following Grandma's return from Hollywood and see if she'd also triggered a crime spree. If so, I might be inclined to think harder about my aunt's theories. "Some of it is a little your fault," Amelia said. "Not Mr. Payne's murder, but the threats against you. No one else would have gotten involved, but you've been deep in this from the start." Amelia dug into her purse and produced a pink stun gun. I nearly rolled out my door. "What are you doing?" I stumbled back in the grass, putting several feet between myself and the weapon. How could Amelia be the murderer? It wasn't possible.
"Don't do this."
Amelia looked as if I'd slapped her.
"I'm going to walk you upstairs," she said. "It's dark except for your porch light." "Do you seriously think I plan to hurt you?"
I pursed my lips and rocked my head side to side. She raised her hands, palms out, then put the stun gun into her glove box.
"Sorry, I should have told you what I was doing first, and I should have known you'd freak out. You've been through a lot."
I waited, unsure of whether I could trust her.
"You should probably leave a television and some lights on when you go out so people will always think someone's home. At least that's what all the cops in my novels tell women."
"Is that what you do?" I asked, regaining my nerve slightly. She shrugged.
"I live over a bookshop, so I'm not at any real risk of a break-in. Readers are generally pretty honest people."
She turned her phone over and dialed 911, then hovered her thumb over the call button.
"There. Now we can at least call for help if there's trouble."
I followed her to my door in body, but my mind was back at her car, specifically in her glove box.
"How long have you had a stun gun?"
"Since college. I upgraded from pepper spray after a girl was assaulted outside the campus gym."
"Where did you buy it?
Were they available everywhere? Could I pick one up at the gas station?"
"Are you thinking of getting one?" she asked. "If so, we could see if my dad has some advice. Truthfully, mine's getting old and it's probably not charged."
I let us into the house and locked the deadbolt behind.
"Are you kidding? I'd probably stun myself. I was just curious."
I smiled, feeling a little guilty for thinking Amelia would hurt me. She followed me up the private staircase to my living area, then wandered into my kitchen.
"Do you have any ice cream? I've never had to go to the police station before, and I'm kind of upset about it."
"Of course I have ice cream."
"Why are you upset?"
She leaned against my kitchen island.
"You'll think it's silly, but I have massive guilt for giving out the description of those kids. They're just kids, and what were they hurting, really? They were only putting sand into the libraries. Stay on the island long enough, and there's no place you won't find sand."
"Amen to that. But those kids need a good scaring. It's not like they'll get into any real trouble. The cops will probably just tell their parents and let it go. But I definitely want them found. They probably saw the maniac who pushed me into the marsh." I opened the freezer and waved one hand to showcase my stash of frozen dreams. "Lady's choice."
"Butter pecan," she said, helping herself to a spoon on the drying rack. "No bowl necessary."
I followed her excellent example and picked out a pint of mint chocolate chip. Amelia leaned against the counter and gazed around my small kitchen.
"Your house is amazing. Have I told you that? I've loved it all my life. There's nothing else like it in Charm. Maybe not even in all of the Outer Banks."
She moved to the window overlooking the ocean.
"Gorgeous."
The cat slunk into view on the deck outside, green eyes flashing in the night, and Amelia jumped. I opened the sliding door to let Maggie in.
"How did she get up there?"
Amelia asked, walking out onto the deck and peering over.
"I have no idea.
I think she's the reincarnated ghost of a woman, or maybe two, who died here." I stuffed a hunk of mint chocolate chip into my mouth. I was warming up to Aunt Clara's hooey about the mistress and the scorned women. Plus, Ghost Cat would explain a lot about Maggie's mysterious appearances. Maggie wound around Amelia's legs, and Amelia scooped her up, nuzzling her face into the ragamuffin's fur.
She's not a goose cat. She's a princess, aren't you?
Fine. She's a homeless germ fest who's getting a bath if she keeps coming up here. Maggie gave me the stink eye.
Aww.
Amelia stroked her head.
Maybe I could take her home with me. People love to see cats in bookstores.
No. I almost spit the ice cream out of my mouth. Amelia grinned. I think she lives here, I said hastily.
That's all.
You love her, Amelia sang. You think she's sweet.
She lifted the cat's paw and waved it at me.
I do not.
I smiled around my next spoonful of minty heaven. But Lou would miss her if she left. I think they're friends.
The gull?
Sure. Amelia let Maggie jump down on the deck and went back to the ice cream she'd left sitting on the railing.
I think you've got the best view in the world.
She tipped her head back, letting blonde hair fly over her face.
Standing here, I feel like I'm in another era. I feel like a wealthy landowner's mistress waiting for his arrival.
What? Amelia laughed. Just kidding. Clara told me all about this home's history. That was mean. I chastised myself for being so gullible.
I think the stories are neat. A little gruesome, but cool. It doesn't even matter if any of it's true. Having a story to go with your home is just so charm.
I hadn't thought of it that way. I'd never known a life without my aunt's wild tales. My whole life had a backstory. I spooned ice cream into my mouth and let the wind throw my hair everywhere at once. Watching dark waves roll in, I dared voice the question that had been on my mind for days. Who do you think has been threatening me? Amelia gave me a sad smile.
I don't know. Based on personality, I'd say the angry contractor is the most likely islander to lash out, but I don't know why he would exactly. There's definitely something fishy about his beef with Payne. And the real estate aspect would also tie him to Sam Smart.
She frowned.
I think this is all about the three of them. Metz, Smart, and Payne. I just don't know how.
I wasn't convinced of anything anymore. I just hoped it would soon be over. Chapter 21. The next day was quiet. I woke with a sugar high from the late-night ice cream and worked on pins and needles through lunch. But nothing remotely scary or interesting happened. Unless I counted Lou carrying his still-live catch onto the deck and tearing one of the poor crab's claws off in front of my lunch crowd. A table of men and women in golf gear cringed. Everyone else exchanged knowing looks. Survival of the fittest was a common theme for wildlife and charm, right alongside proper use of sunscreen and community spirit for the humans. I knew I was back in the town's good graces when a patron asked if he could leave a flyer advertising the annual street party on my counter. I agreed to the request and asked for a second copy, which I proudly displayed in my window, just in case anyone wandering in for tea or a snack was still unclear about my full public pardon. At closing time, I headed upstairs to change, wishing I'd remember to tell Grady about the event. I locked my front door around 8 and headed down the boardwalk toward Main Street. Warm wind off the ocean whipped my hair into a frenzy and fluttered my flowy off-the-shoulder blouse. I tipped my head back and held out my arms, feeling 10 years younger in my faded jeans and flip-flops. The pale gray color and light fabric of my top reminded me of Aunt Clara, except that her entire wardrobe screamed mystical hippie. An apt description of both my great aunts, now that I thought about it. I could only dream of being half as peaceful and centered as either of them tonight, but maybe someday. I faced forward and watched where I was going as the boardwalk went parallel to Ocean Drive. A dark pickup approached, so I waited. When it slowed, I stepped back, fear jumping all over my skin, tearing me out of my happy place. The driver's side window rolled down and Grady peered out. I pretended not to notice him,
certain I was in trouble for hijacking his family's ice cream party last night. He stopped the pickup before me and hung an elbow over the open window frame.
"Good evening, Swan."
His voice was tight and his expression unreadable, but his pale gray eyes were as unfairly attractive as usual. I lifted a hand in greeting. I couldn't tell if I was in trouble. He pushed the truck into park.